I'm Ross Sinclair for BizNews.com. Welcome to the second episode of Crypt Talk. Today I have with me Gaurav Nair of Geltech. If you'd like to learn more about Geltech, click on the link down below. A reminder that none of this content should be taken as financial advice, and please speak to your financial advisor. Thank you for being here, Gaurav.
Thank you for having me, Ross.
So just to get started, Bitcoin is the first cryptocurrency. How did it come to be?
There was an anonymous person named Satoshi who created Bitcoin. And at the time, there were a group of people who knew each other through the internet, known as the cypherpunks. And Satoshi created Bitcoin as a reaction to the financial crisis that happened in 2007-2008, seeing all the banks getting bailed out, seeing what happens when there's a system, the financial system, that's controlled by elites. It was a bit of a reaction to that. In the white paper that Satoshi wrote, they explained that it could be a payment mechanism. That was its primary use case initially. However, it's probably grown to be much more than that. After a few years of building up Bitcoin and interacting on it and upgrading it, et cetera, and sorting out some problems in the initial period, Satoshi then disappeared. The Bitcoin that Satoshi's wallet has was never spent. And so that left the Bitcoin community without a leader, which on the one hand may be seen as a negative thing, but also it means that they had to figure it out themselves, etc. And there isn't one person who could derail the project now.
So is it beneficial to not have a personality tied to the project, unlike other tokens which have, you know, like Doquan for Lunaterra, who just make statements that might affect the price?
Exactly right. So it comes with pros and cons. If you compare it to the Ethereum network, Vitalik, one of the founders, he's still very well known and still comments on it. And I think on the balance, the Ethereum network benefits a lot from it, from his leadership, his thought leadership, etc. It's largely outside of his control. Some people would argue that, but if he suggests something, it generally happens. But the whole community has to actually agree. They need to reach consensus. So it comes with pros and cons. But I think Bitcoin itself and what it's trying to be, it benefits from not having a leader anymore, from being totally decentralized. Mm.
So we often hear about Bitcoin as a volatile asset, but news sources and information don't necessarily go into what the use cases are. Could you speak more about what the Bitcoin use cases are?
As I said, the first use case for Bitcoin was to be a payment network. This would be a payment network that was outside the control of any single government or set of individuals or institutions. And it would also be much more efficient. So if you consider making a payment internationally, you have to use the SWIFT network. By using the SWIFT network, it takes a couple of days usually. And it often costs, you know, $50 to $100, $200, etc. So it's slow and expensive. And also it's in the control of the US government, of course. Many countries that either rightly or wrongly have ended up on the wrong side of the US government, they've been sanctioned and they can't use the SWIFT network anymore. And they're effectively cut off from international trade. So the Bitcoin network is decentralized. No one controls it. And so anyone can use this network. It is in fact much faster. It takes a few minutes, in the longest case, maybe half an hour, to process payments. And it is quite cheap to process these payments as well. Of course, Bitcoin's so volatile. And if you want to make a $1,000 payment to someone, today that might be 5% of a Bitcoin, but as you send it across, the person receiving it might only receive $800 if the price of Bitcoin has dropped, or might receive much more. Mm. And so that limits its use a bit to use as a payment network, because you want something a bit more stable. However, the Bitcoin community have built something on top of Bitcoin called the Lightning Network. And the Lightning Network is even cheaper and faster, and it uses Bitcoin as its base to actually process payments. And what we'll probably see is some fintech companies that will actually send dollars or rand, something stable, using the Lightning Network in the future. They'll probably convert Rand to Bitcoin, send it, and then Bitcoin back to dollars, all in the space of a few seconds. And hopefully the Bitcoin price hasn't moved that much, so it should it should help with the stability.
Absolutely.
The other one is, and I'm sure you've heard of this, Ross, is as well, as kind of the store of value argument. Mm. We know that the US government's printed a lot of money, and inflation now is coming home to roost. It's the highest it's been in 40 years in the US. Bitcoin cannot be printed at will. The schedule at which it's issued at is already preset, and it eventually caps out at 21 million of Bitcoin over a period of time. And so what this means is that it can't be inflated away. And when you have one asset that's can't be inflated, another asset that is inflating, so Bitcoin being the asset that can't be inflated, dollars that can be inflated away, what you should see is that the value of Bitcoin should go up as the dollars are being inflated. Mm. However, we've seen that this hasn't happened. We've seen that, if anything, the value of Bitcoin has dropped drastically. And potentially that's because Bitcoin is still quite a new asset. It's only about 12, 13 years old now. And so it could be that, while people are still adopting this asset, people are coming in and out of it, etc., it doesn't really have the price stability that you'd want to see. So this could be a use case for the future. Previously, people thought this was a big use case. And if and when we go into a period again of lots of printing of money internationally, and if Bitcoin's more mature by then, it could be the case that Bitcoin will hold its value really well against all these other currencies.
Is that why it's often described as a digital gold?
Exactly, exactly. And that speaks to an overlapping and third use case, mm-hmm. which is to be a better version of gold, to be a digital gold. Gold, of course, is also seen as a inflation hedge, but we also see that the gold price doesn't follow inflation exactly. Mm-hmm. If there's a war, then the price of gold jumps up, etc. But the reason that Bitcoin is called digital gold is that it shares some characteristics with gold. You've got to work hard and mine it to get it out of the ground. Bitcoin has an analog. You can't just print it at will. There's a finite supply. With gold, we don't know what that is, but there's only so much that's in the earth that we can get at. But however, it's better than gold in some ways. It's quite easy to secure Bitcoin because you can just save it on a hard drive and put it in a vault. Mm-hmm. However, gold, the more of it you have, it takes up more and more and more space. The security infrastructure could be much more expensive, as well as transporting it is very difficult. With Bitcoin, of course, it's very easy. You can send it electronically. You can carry it on a piece of paper. So people say that Bitcoin is better at being gold than gold itself.
Cryptocurrencies have been used quite a lot in the Ukrainian war. How have they helped?
That's a great point. So that's another use. It speaks to the payment network use, that no one controls this payment network. Mm. And so what it means that actors like Russia, they can also use it. No one can ban them from using it. However, it's also being used to deliver aid to the Ukrainians. When banking infrastructure is not working, like during a war, it's still possible to send Bitcoin and send other cryptocurrencies. A lot of funding has been raised in this way. What we also see is that in regimes with dictators, where there are resistance groups, they also raise money in this way. It's because the dictator can cut the resistance group off from the banking sector, but they can't cut them off from Bitcoin. And so it's had lots of use, and also it's also had uses for charities that don't have any banking infrastructure into where they're going into. Again, cryptocurrencies can be used. And what we've also seen is that with cryptocurrencies, you can bypass borders quite effectively. Cryptocurrencies are often called the money of the internet. And as we know, with the internet, borders are much less meaningful. Just because you can bypass borders doesn't mean it's compliant with the law. We still have exchange control rules in South Africa. However, there's been many stories out of the Ukraine of people who have taken their life savings, converted to Bitcoin, and there's a way to convert your Bitcoin key into a phrase of 24 words. And they've then memorized those words, and they've just walked out with their savings in their head. And even if they've been stopped by Russian soldiers, etc., it's not evident to anyone that they have anything precious. And then when they get to Poland or wherever, they've actually managed to carry all their savings with them. And then you know, hopefully try and carry on and salvage their life from there.
The cryptocurrency markets have been in a bit of a slump at the moment, but this isn't the first slump that these markets have faced before. And historically, they bounce back quite aggressively. Do you think this is going to be the case once again?
I do think so. I mean, as you say, Ross, there's been many, many slumps. Because it's a new asset class, it's highly volatile. When investors are interested, it takes relatively little money to move the price. And that's been the case even more so in the past. And over time, as the asset class has grown, it's become harder and harder, but it's still very volatile when we compare it to something like the US stock market. And so, I mean, some of the crashes that Bitcoin has gone through have been insane crashes. We've had Bitcoin go in 2013. Bitcoin went from $200 to $1,500 back to $200. And there's been many of these up and down, sometimes 90% down. The most recent one was March of 2020, when we went into the COVID, pandemic. Bitcoin went down from $8,000 to $5,000. Sure. And then in May last year, we had another famous 50% drawdown where Bitcoin went from $60,000 to $35,000. And as we know, we're currently sitting at somewhere around the $20,000, $21,000 mark as we speak right now. Mm. And I guess that the thing that's reassuring is that a lot of the price action doesn't have to do with the fundamentals of crypto. Mm. It isn't the case that the Bitcoin chain went down. It isn't the case that someone managed to break the encryption that the chain uses, etc., that there was a chain-breaking bug. None of that. It seems much more to do with two big events. The first is, as we know, because of the pandemic, the US government created a lot of stimulus. They printed a lot of money. And that led to a lot of inflation. And now because of that inflation, the Federal Reserve is raising interest rates. As the cost of money, which interest rates are, increases, all investors, they have to sell some assets that pay interest become more attractive compared to riskier assets like tech stocks, and crypto assets are seen as extremely risky. And so they sell some of that. And so it's this macroeconomic picture that has led to a lot of investors taking their money out of crypto funds and out of crypto. Mm-hmm. That's the macroeconomic picture. And simultaneously, we've had an event that happened about a month ago now, where one of the stable coins broke its peg. Mm-hmm. And what's happened is that aside from that shaking a bit of confidence, there were investment funds and other companies that were exposed to this. And now that the effects of that are starting to come out, where these companies have now become insolvent, or it seems likely that they'll become insolvent. There's a hedge fund, Three Arrows Capital, and another company called Celsius, which was acting as a bank, taking mm-hmm. deposits of crypto and paying interest. It seems like they're both in trouble. And sometimes there's knock-on effects where now that they're insolvent or in trouble, they're not paying the other companies that they owe. Mm-hmm. And so as this is happening, what these companies do is they sell off collateral they have, which adds more selling pressure into the crypto market. So both of these have caused the price to really drop. And we saw some big drops over the weekend. The price has come back a little bit. But as I say, it has less to do with crypto and more the macroeconomic environment. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is that these crypto funds that failed, they're considered centralized finance because it's a fund. And that's where we've seen the failures. But what we haven't seen fail is the decentralized finance side. The decentralized finance is these financial programs that are built on blockchains, and they've been running quite smoothly. And so that's why I say that this has more to do with outside of crypto than really any of the fundamentals of crypto.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time, Gaurav.
My pleasure. Thanks, Ross.